Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this first day of May, May 1st, and it is a Thursday. Coming up in just a moment, so much talk on the economy. It's dominating the presidential campaign, and we're going to speak with a guest who has traveled thousands of miles, 11,000 miles all over the Midwest, which he says has changed absolutely radically, and that the American future doesn't lie in Alabama or Las Vegas. It lies where it has always lain, in the heartland, in the battered bellwether of the very middle of the country. So far, the Midwest is failing the global challenge, and the book that he wrote intends to ask how the Midwest and America can win that battle, which is a question that we're all asking. His book is Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism, and I think it's probably one of the more important conversations that we can have these days. Richard Longworth will be joining us in just one moment. We are, though, here for a pledge drive. It's our spring membership drive, and we're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm here with Mike Crane, CEO of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we ask you please to make your pledge of support at WPR.org, or you can go toll-free, 888-202-2552. Hello, Mike.
Hello, it's good to be here. 888-202-2552 is the number. We have a goal this hour of $2,500, and we need your help. Won't you be the first to get this started, to make your donation? Make your pledge online now at WPR.org or toll-free, 888-202-2552. 2552.
Public radio is certainly a partnership, and Wisconsin Public Radio and National Public Radio work together to bring you news coverage that is really unlike, and so many people say this when I talk to them, it's unlike anything else on your radio dial. And we're in partnership with you. We do the best job we possibly can every day to bring you radio that is informative and enjoyable. And then in exchange, we ask that you make a membership contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution is vital because listener support is public radio's most important and reliable source of income. So please just take a moment right now to join in the public radio partnership. Some of you can become a new member or renew your membership right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Help us to reach that goal of $2,500 in this hour. You know, it'll just take a little over 3 minutes. That's the average amount of time that we find it takes to make a pledge. When you contribute online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552, you know that you'll have your pledge done and out of the way in just a little over 3 minutes. You'll give your name, address, phone number, and how much you'd like to give, and that's really all there is to it. So please take a moment to go online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now and make your pledge.
Some of you who are newer listeners, and we always get them, this is the first time I've heard you, and I always think, great, your whole life is going to be changed. It is listener-supported, and that means that part of our budget, which is really about one-third of the budget, comes from your contributions. So we're coming to you today to ask for your financial support of the programming that I know you love and that you rely on each day. So many of you say, I cannot live without Wisconsin Public Radio. Make your pledge, WPR.org, or toll-free at 888-202-2552. This pledge drive is your opportunity to show how much that you value Wisconsin Public Radio. So a contribution of any amount makes you a member of WPR. And, you know, take a moment to think about what Wisconsin Public Radio is worth to you. The conversations we have, you won't find anywhere else. And then make your pledge of support securely online at WPR.org or call toll-free at 888-202-2552.
Think of your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio as an investment.
Right.
We all need to invest wisely. Many times we don't. But a wise investment would be making your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. And it only takes a few minutes of your time, not a lot of hard thinking about balancing a portfolio or something like that. And just a few of your hard-earned dollars help Wisconsin Public Radio to go and bring you hours and hours of great talk programming on the Ideas Network. So contribute at WPR.org or call 888 202-2552. And in just a few minutes, you'll be a shareholder in this great station. Go online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now.
And if you're new to public radio, here's the difference between public and commercial radio. Commercial radio stations exist to generate the largest audience, so of course they can sell their advertising time at the highest rate possible. Public radio stations exist to provide programming of significance to anyone who wishes to listen. We're here during this membership drive to give you the opportunity to celebrate the difference with your pledge. And how do they do that, Mike?
It's very easy. Just go online to WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552. Help us to raise that $2,500 this hour with your contact right now.
Thanks, Mike Crane, very much. We have an extremely important conversation. This has been weaving into almost every conversation we have as we talk so much about the presidential campaign. People really feeling that they have a hard time making ends meet. The cost of gas way up for truck drivers, for people trying to heat their homes. The cost of food. We did a show yesterday on the food crisis in the world and how there are riots in various countries because people can't get food. Mortgage crisis, people having to work a couple jobs. And we're trying to figure out how to stimulate the American economy. I think one of the very best books that has been written on this recently is by Richard Longworth. Richard is the author of Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism. He is now a fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and was an award-winning foreign correspondent and senior writer at the Chicago Tribune. Dick was twice a Pulitzer Prize finalist. He lives in Chicago, and he traveled 1,100 miles, got in a car, and went all over the Midwest to farm areas, to cities that are decaying, to cities that are doing fairly well, to immigrants, to find out how they are doing, to find out how people are doing who have lost their jobs to competition from overseas. And he has some solutions in the book and also talks about the extent of the problem and how the Midwest really is the bellwether for the economy in America. He's a wonderful guest, and I think we'll all benefit from having him with us. Our phone number for On Air is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Hi, Dick. Thanks so much for being with us.
Kathleen, good morning. Yeah. And one correction I think that is worth making. I didn't drive 1,100 miles. I drove 11,000 miles.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And
that's
when
right.
When you drive that much around, you listen to a lot of radio. And you are never, I was never out of the range of the voice of Rush Limbaugh and his brothers in bile. And I was never out of range of a really good NPR station. There's so many. And I think, you know, there's competition out there, I think, for the hearts and especially the minds of people and of Midwesterners. And you're fighting the good fight. And I wish you luck, especially during this pledge drive.
Thanks,
good luck.
Dick. Thank you. We hope we got their minds. We know that we're appealing to their minds. Oh, yeah, it is 11,000 miles. 11,000 miles!
Which is...
You saw a lot.
I did. And it was fascinating. It was wonderful. That's the way to see it, of course, is driving around. And we live in a beautiful territory, a troubled territory, but it is beautiful, and I enjoyed so much of this.
I have so many times wanted to send your book, and I hope it's come to the attention of people who are running for president, because everybody's struggling with this issue. It's obviously number one on the minds of the American people. So many people are hurting. So many workers are hurting. Their jobs have changed or their jobs have left. They can't pay for gas. We got the ethanol question here. We got people working two jobs. We've got the immigrant question. And I really think, and I don't say this just to flatter you, but I think everybody needs to read what you discovered. It's so important.
I think the candidates may get it. When Barack Obama talked about people being bitter, he was just being a good reporter. There is a lot of bitterness and fear out there. You hear a lot of talk, well, NAFTA is the big thing. That's become an issue. And people say they're going to reform NAFTA. And I kind of think I know where they're coming from, because when I was doing my reporting, I'd go to these old factory towns, I'd talk to workers, I'd talk to city officials, businessmen, people like that, and I'd say, what's the problem? And they invariably they say NAFTA. They kind of snap it out like that, NAFTA. And NAFTA, we know, certainly has its flaws, but that's an awful lot of blame for one little old trade treaty to carry. And I think I know what was going on. Globalization is what is affecting this territory. And globalization is a great big, complex, confusing phenomenon. It's hard to get your mind and your arms around it. So I think when people say NAFTA, what they're really saying is something's happening to my life and I don't like it very much.
Mm-hmm.
And NAFTA is kind of shorthand for all these pressures that are affecting the big cities like Chicago and Milwaukee, the smaller industrial cities, certainly the farm areas and the rural towns, which are going through a real crisis, affecting education. It's affecting almost everything we do and the way we live here in the Midwest.
Right. So how has globalization affected the heartland?
It's hard to remember, hard to imagine, but about 100 years ago, we were the Silicon Valley of the United States. All the good ideas, all the new inventions, all the backyard and basement tinkerers who pretty much invented the 20th century came out of the Midwest, and we created this industrial revolution. We had a lot of really good ideas, and the fact is we've been living on them ever since. Those ideas were so good we never had to have any more, and we've got out of the habit of innovation. So while other areas of the world and other areas of this country, especially on the two coasts, are racing ahead, are innovating, are becoming Silicon Valleys of today, we've lagged behind. And basically, because of our history, what we do here in the Midwest, we do two big things for a living. One is farming, and the other is heavy industry.
Mm-hmm.
And globalization has come along and just tossed both of them right up in the air. You have the, you've been talking about the food crisis around the world and the dominance of big agricultural corporations like Cargill and ADM and ones like that, the need for efficiency, the need for mass production, the growing consolidation of farms. All this has been going on for years and decades, but globalization is speeding it up. At the same time, you have the decline of Midwestern industry. Manufacturing, which again has been going on for years through the Rust Belt era and the Japanese challenge. But we kind of, a lot of people thought that that was a cyclical downturn, just sort of part of the ordinary economic ups and downs, and that we would come back. And now people really realize we have to stop kidding ourselves. We're out of the industrial era.
Yeah.
We're into a global era. All of our workers, including our farmers and our factory workers and our office workers, are in competition every day with workers all around the world. This really is something new, and it has hit particularly hard at these two big things, farming and industry, that the Midwest does. And I think we, in many ways, we're kind of in a state of denial. But we're beginning to come out of that, traveling around, talking with people about some of the ideas in my book. I find that people do realize this, and they do realize it's a new era, and we've got to do something about it. But, of course, the big question is, what do we do?
I know it is a huge question, what do we do? And so what do we do?
First, one of the points, I don't come up with any magic bullets or anything, but I do see some things we have to start doing. I was astonished going around the Midwest, talking with people, talking with, real experts, academics and business people and state officials and all that, that you'd run into people in Wisconsin who knew everything there was to know about Wisconsin, but didn't have any idea of what was going on across the state border in Illinois mm-hmm. or Minnesota. In Indiana, you'd run into people who knew Indiana upside and down, didn't have the foggiest what was happening in Michigan or Ohio. We are locked up in these 200-year-old state borders. All of our thinking is state-based, I think largely because of the power of the big state universities. All our politics is based on state governments. And in a global era where we are in global competition, we're not competition with Iowa or Minnesota anymore. We're in competition with people and companies 10,000 miles away, and the states don't cut it. If they're too small, they're too outdated. States often have a obligation now to take care of the of the victims of the industrial age, the declining manufacturing towns, the dying rural areas, the unemployment, things like that, to a degree that they really can't focus on the needs of the future, like urban infrastructure or especially education. So my point is we got to get out of this state-based thinking. We've got to start thinking as a region, because what's going on in Wisconsin is going on in Iowa, and it's going on in Ohio, and it's going on in Michigan. This is a regional, not a state problem. So if we could just, for a starter, get together and start talking as a region, comparing our problems and hopefully our solutions, that would be a start. I would like to see universities, especially the Big Ten universities, cooperating a lot more than they do. I mean, we have incredible assets and brain power here in this region. Put it all together, and you've got the biggest intellectual powerhouse in the world, but the problem is we don't put it together. I'd like to see economic regions that cooperating more, even when they go across state lines. Let's get specific. In the Chicago economic region, stretches from north of Milwaukee, down through Racine and Kenosha, through Chicago, through northwestern Indiana, really on to South Bend and up into Michigan, up to Grand Rapids. This is a four-state area, and it exists as an economic region, but there is almost no political or intellectual or planning going on across state borders. So, to get some sort of a regional thought going. We are divided by distance. Our major cities, our major universities, they're all about 200 miles apart. Mm-hmm. That's a long ways. And in this day and age of crowded airlines, we have a hard time really overcoming this tyranny of distance. What about a good high-speed rail network? This has been an idea. It's been a gleam in people's eyes for years. Right. It's never amounted to anything. Maybe the time has come, but that is going to take some regional planning.
Richard Longworth is our guest. He is the author of Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism, as we have the state of the U.S. economy on our minds pretty much every day now. He offers some solutions, and he also talks about the history of the problem of globalization, about big industry leaving, farming changing completely in the Midwest, and we're a bellwether of how healthy or unhealthy the economy is in America, and it's not particularly healthy. He's a fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and was an award-winning foreign correspondent and senior writer at the Chicago Tribune. Welcoming your phone calls, the number is 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and we are having a very short pledge drive. I'm joined in the studio by Mike Crane from Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're back for a moment just to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go online at WPR.org, or you can call toll-free 888-202-2552. Hi again, Mike.
It's good to be here. And, we have a goal of $2,500 for this hour, and we have heard from five people so far going online to WPR.org or contributing at 888-202-2552. And they've helped us to raise $500 toward our goal of $2,500. Some of the people include Roger and Marilyn of Bristol, who said that we love the station. It's very informative. Ann and Jerome of Duluth listen every day and said WPR is part of our lives. Is it part of your life? Then please get in touch now at WPR.org or toll-free 888-202-2552.
As our guest is saying today, all of us together can do more than each of us as individuals. Too much separates us. And when we all give, these contributions add up to help bring you great programs. WPR exists because, seriously, it's because you contribute, and your contribution makes a huge difference. Please contribute now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we've tried to make it very easy to contribute to public radio. If you've never done it before, here's how it gets done. You contribute online at WPR.org, where you can just fill in the blanks. And we've done that since we were children. And or you can just call us and someone else will fill in the blanks for you at 888-202-2552, and we'll ask you your name, address, phone number, and how much you'd like to give.
And we'll ask how you'd like to pay. You can do it with a credit card, or we can send you a reminder in the mail. We never sell or trade your name and address. That's something that is kept private between you and Wisconsin Public Radio. So that's it. You go to WPR.org, or you call 888 202 2552 and do it right now.
Kathleen and her producer, Rhonda Fanning, try to be as timely as possible when choosing topics and guests. And her show has attracted many loyal listeners who want to hear in-depth discussions that go beyond the headlines. Think of what you're hearing today. What a timely topic. You know, we're all getting more and more worried about the economy. And not only is this about the economy today with Richard Longworth, but it's about our economy right here in the Midwest. And that program, like all of the programs that you hear with Kathleen and Joy Cardine and Ben Marins and the rest, that's made possible by you. So please call right now 1-888, still toll free, 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
We know you're donating because you value the radio programs you hear on WPR. You heard Richard talk about the difference between listening to Rush Limbaugh or to NPR stations as he traveled 11,000 miles across the Midwest and much preferred NPR and learned so much more from that. We're pleased to be able to give you something of value in exchange for your support, which he probably could have used, the WPR member card. We think you'll find some real value in the card. It's 2-for-1 deals at participating restaurants and bed and breakfasts and cultural attractions. You'll find value in the card all year, just as we value your support all year. Pledge $120 or more, and the member card is yours. Go to WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552.
You are part of the public in Wisconsin Public Radio. You're part of our community of listeners. So maybe you've been here for a long time, but many of your friends and neighbors have been already contributing. Why not join this group of people who loyally support the service that we all consider valuable? Become a part of our community of members. A contribution of any amount makes you a member, and it's just so simple. Go online to WPR.org or call toll-free at 888-202-2552. And we have a goal of $2,500 during this hour. And as we said, we had at least five people
call.
So far.
All right.
And do we have time to share another comment?
Well, why not?
All right.
Richard
from Waukesha got in touch and said, I get a wide variety of subjects that can be discussed. You get the truth of what's going on in the world. Listen to public radio and you can hear the experts.
Yeah, how true. Thanks, Mike, very much. We are going to take some phone calls for our guest now, Richard Longworth. His book, well worth reading, Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism. He got in a car, drove 11,000 miles all over the Midwest, Indiana and Illinois and Wisconsin and Minnesota and Ohio and Michigan to find out how globalization had affected the Midwest and how people were hurting. And he also came up with some towns that had some creative solutions to what ailed them. We're going to take some phone calls for him now. 800-486-8655 is the number. And we go to Boyd from Milwaukee first. Hi, Boyd.
Good morning, Kathleen, and hello, Mr. Longworth.
Boyd, good morning.
I definitely plan on reading your book. Sounds fascinating and hits home with me. To get to the point, what you had said when talking about what's going on in the Midwest, it reminded me of Thomas Frank's book, What Happened to Kansas. Why I thought about that, though, was it seems with a lot of, you know, the economic downturn and what have you, it does make a lot of people vulnerable. And my question to you is this. Do you feel that maybe this has allowed maybe certain, maybe I'm sounding alarmist when I say this, but fringe politics to get into people's psyche and help, you know, and that might affect how they're going to vote at the polls? Because I do feel that the Rust Belt, as well as the mountain states, are really the key, you know, battlegrounds that both major parties kind of want to lock into.
Well, Boyd, I think you're absolutely right. I covered eight states in the book. Illinois is probably going to go Democratic, and Indiana solidly Republican, and the other six are all swing states, including Wisconsin. So this is really a political, important political background. I didn't find an awful lot of fringe political movements, although you can't rule that out. Again, when people feel their lives have been pulled right off from under them, if you figure you've got a stable life, if you're living in a town, your parents have lived there, your grandparents are going to live there, you think your kids are going to be there, and suddenly all this gets tossed up in the air by some sort of distant and very mysterious forces. This is the breeding ground where conspiracy theories can grow. I was talking with the regional UAW leader in Dayton, Ohio. He's the UAW guy for about five or six counties there. And he was talking about how he himself and a lot of his union leaders were signing on to Lyndon LaRouche. Thought that he might have something coming to him. You know, that gets a little scary. Mostly, Tom Frank, of course, wrote about the same thing that Barack Obama was talking about. The people who are bitter and stunned and don't know what's happening do cling to the social issues, the so-called social values that we heard so much about before. God's, guns, and gays. That is, you know, the usual shorthand for that. The 2006 congressional elections were very interesting in that, contrary to what Tom Frank wrote, people seem to be voting their pocketbooks for a change. There does seem to be a shift back towards economic issues, and I think you're really going to see that in this election. Some people, especially in Washington, will say, oh my, the Midwest is going populist, the Midwest is going protectionist. I don't think that's it. People do realize we're tied in the rest of the world. And people aren't ready, you know, to raise the drawbridge, just say, stop the world, I want to get off. They are just demanding some answers to what is happening to their lives and some consideration when economic policy is made.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Boyd, for the call. On this day when there will be thousands of immigrants marching and looking for a change in immigration policy, you have some very interesting, and I'm sure some will take you on this issue, comments about immigrants. You talk about everywhere in the Midwest, exceptions exist. Most of them are meatpacking towns that have drawn in thousands of Mexican workers. These towns are growing. If they have a future, indeed, if the Midwest has a future, it depends on immigrants.
Well, that's true, because our population is decreasing. We're losing population. We're losing political representation and clout. The only growth is coming pretty much from immigrants, and a lot of these are, you know, we're not talking only about the PhDs from India, but we're talking about workers from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And you find these small meatpacking towns in rural areas that are the only towns in their areas that are growing and thriving. The rest, being stuck in rural areas far from metro regions, are dying out. What you quite often you find that these towns traditionally are blue collar, very conservative, and quite often have been always white, very homogeneous, suddenly wake up one morning, so to speak, and find out they're 30 or 40% Mexicans, and the Mexicans are taking a lot of the jobs that the whites in the town used to have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this sounds like a real recipe for trouble, but I found invariably in most of these towns that people were sitting down saying, we got some problems, what are we going to do about it? Police forces are cooperating, schools, hospitals, ran into a couple weekly newspaper publishers who've gone down to Mexico to the towns where their Mexicans come from to find out what's the conditions there that drove these immigrants to come to Iowa or Illinois or Indiana. In other words, you've got a lot of small-town Americans that are treating this with great seriousness and determination, not that it's easy, and the fact that a lot of the immigrants are illegal or undocumented, if you will, bothers people in these strong, law-abiding territories. It's extremely complex, and there's no real easy answer to this. I do say in the book that you know, the kind of demagoguery that you often get from state capitals or some representatives, like, okay, I'll mention a name, Sensenbrenner in Wisconsin or Steve King in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this doesn't help. It's a complex situation. The future of our region depends on solving this.
Mm-hmm.
And quick, easy answers don't do it.
John from Mercer, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I just have a comment to make. We work in the Midwest for a worker. And what this man is saying,
John, excuse me, Kathleen. Yeah, I'm cutting out.
I am too. I can't hear you, John. I'm so sorry. Please call us back on another line because I know you have important things to say, so please call back. George from Brooklyn, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen. Mr. Longworth speaks in terms of regional effects from globalization and outsourcing, And I think that it's important that we remember that all of the problems, the myriad of problems that we have, education, health care, voters' rights, voting machines, all these are a function of money in the infrastructure. And we have just come off, or we're coming off, or we will be coming off, of 30 years of deficit spend and borrow, and that there is another alternative. And since we're going to have to endure inflation, which will wipe out half of our national debt, but we have built a $10 trillion national debt and $1 trillion worth of personal debt and credit card. And what we need to do is, in the next round, in order to stimulate the economy and get people back to work, we're going to have to spend. But this time we tax and spend, and we tax the inflation. And I would like to hear Mr. Longworth, if he has some additional input or alternative plans. I'd like to hear them. And I'll be pleased to take the answers off the air.
Well, I mean, this is a very good question, and obviously you're right. Federal policy does make a great big difference. And as citizens of the United States, we have to work on that, try and get more responsibility in Washington, a closer attention to deficits, a realization that if we're going to spend, we have to pay for it, and that is all part of the solution. In the meantime, though, what we do, we are facing problems here in the Midwest. Every region is facing its own problems. We have our own here in the Midwest, and what are we going to do about it? Do we wait for Washington to solve the problems, or do we do what we can? Now, if you were to ask me, right, tell me exactly what we're supposed to do, I can't do it. But I think we have to begin thinking that we do have responsibility for our lives here, that some strange, distant economic forces have upset how we live our lives in the Midwest. We weren't prepared for it, and we aren't coping with it very well. So how can we do better while trying to get some sort of fiscal responsibility back in Washington?
We got into a big discussion yesterday as we were talking about the food crisis with a number of experts from the UN and elsewhere. And, of course, the conversation turned to ethanol and the massive acres that are being devoted to the growing of corn for ethanol. You spent a lot of time in Iowa looking at this issue. What are your thoughts? A lot of the guests thought that it was contributing to a food crisis in a major way.
No question that it is. If you devote all that corn to ethanol, that is that much less corn available for export. We traditionally export a lot of our corn. We aren't doing it anymore. Of course, we also export a lot of our soybeans, but as more cropland is switched from soybeans to corn to take advantage of the ethanol boom, that's less soybeans to feed the world. Now, there's all other sorts of factors going into here, the raising of energy prices, the rising standard of living in other parts of the world. I assume you went into that yesterday. But that is... The ethanol boom is causing a lot of these food problems. Now, you go around the Midwest and you talk about ethanol. When you talk to the experts who've looked at this, by and large, they think it's a bubble. I mean, you're talking, ethanol is based on continuing high prices of two of the most volatile commodities in the world, which is oil and corn. Those prices go up and down and up and down, and you really can't base a future on the expectation these prices are going to stay high. But in the meantime, if you go to small rural towns that are losing everything, and suddenly here comes the promise of an ethanol plant that's going to create about 20 jobs, and probably 20 pretty good jobs. Oh, it's awful hard to tell those towns.
Don't
do it, because it's their very future. You've got, it's a human problem and a political problem as well as an economic problem.
Yeah. Here's an email. We were better off before we accepted NAFTA and the WTO. We can get back to a better life without them. We'll never go forward as people, as long as we let the multinational corporate bottom line be the be-all and end-all of our economic policy, that will always bring the American people lower, not higher. When money is God, the people is suffer. This is from Carl in La Crosse.
It sounds good, and I'm afraid the world's gone beyond that. This is not an answer. If we want to turn ourselves into the North American version of Burma, for instance, we could do that. But you can't cut yourself off from most of the rest of the world, considering that we, the United States, run so much of the rest of the world. We've got our problems. We've lost our power, so much of our power in our clout under the Bush administration, but we still are the 800-pound gorilla. We are the ones who created the WTO, and we're the ones who created NAFTA. And we're the ones who are going to have a great deal of say over future trade deals.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just simply disassociate yourself from the world economy. That's sort of like saying that Wisconsin could disassociate itself from the American economy during most of the 20th century. We are in a global economy. There it is. What are we going to do about it? For future trade deals, I would hope, would have pay much more attention to workers' rights and environmental rights, two areas that are often given short shrift in these trade deals. It's not cutting ourselves off from the rest of the world. It's just trying to make sure that while we do what we can to enrich the rest of the world, the third world, desperately wants to rise to our standard of living, that we don't do this on the backs of American workers. We haven't figured out how to do that yet.
Richard Longworth, our guest, his book is Caught in the Middle. Richard spent 11,000 miles traveling around the Midwest trying to find out what creative things were happening in cities, looking at cities that were dying, looking at rural workers and migrants, and looking at the heartland of America to figure out what ails the economy, because what happens here can be extended to what happens in other parts of this country. He's a fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. He was an award-winning foreign correspondent and senior writer at the Chicago Tribune and twice a Pulitzer Prize finalist. We have a line open if you'd like to join us. It's 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you are in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is Richard Longworth. His book is Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism. Our number is 800-486-8655. Or you can send an email if you'd like, and that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Eugene from Viola, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen. Mr. Longworth, I will order your book.
Gene, thank you very much.
And just one short comment. I grew up right after World War II, and my parents had gone through the Great Depression.
Right.
And there was one thing they were, we raised a big garden, but there was also one thing they were very, very adamant about. You will not waste food. Anything
yes,
you put on your plate, you will eat, or we will save it for you for breakfast.
That was the Depression generation, and my parents went through the same thing, so I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Thanks much.
Yeah, thanks. It ties nicely into a promo for the next hour, which is greed and how we, if we didn't have as much, could maybe work fewer hours during the day or work fewer days during the week. Can you spend a little bit more time, Dick, talking about the creative solutions that you've found in little towns and also in big cities like Chicago that have sparked the economy?
Yes. Let me mention a couple. Places that are recovering are places that have often lost everything. I mean, Chicago's an example.
Mm.
We haven't lost all of our manufacturing, but everything that made this the city of the big shoulders back in the earlier era just went in the 60s and 70s and 80s. Lost our steel mill, meatpacking, metalworking, you know, everything. And we pretty much had to reinvent ourselves. And we have done that to a degree, but often building on what we lost. For instance, we had the stock markets or the stockyards. And this created the markets along LaSalle Street that used to trade in corn futures and pork bellies and that sort of thing. Well, the pork bellies went away, but these guys still knew how to trade. And they do, and they are the ones who invented global derivatives and this sort of thing, and it sparked a terrific industry here. We've lost a lot of our industry, but we still have people here who know a lot about industry. If you want expertise, business services, on from people who really know industry, you come to Chicago. It was mentioned to me that, you know, if you want really good information, say, on motorcycles, you got to go to Milwaukee to do it.
Right.
Wisconsin, those motorcycles. My point is that if you've lost everything, look to what you know. Akron, Ohio doesn't make tires anymore. But working with Akron University, working with the companies there, they've developed quite a nice little polymers industry, and they're working on it. So what does your town know? Peoria, Illinois. There's a big whiskey-making place. Hiram Walker used to be down there. Well, that's gone, but as the folks in Peoria will tell you, we know fermentation. Well, there you've got the basis for some bioscience activity, and they're making the most of it.
Uh-huh.
Build on what you know.
Great. And those cities, tell me about cities like Detroit. Tell me about the car industry.
The car industry is the making of cars. And the assembly of cars is going. They're trying, they are trying desperately to hold on to it. And I have to say, I see a bit of this in Milwaukee, too, trying desperately to hold on to industries that are probably going to go anyhow. The car industry is. Detroit, who knows what's going to happen? Pretty quick, about 30% of their city taxes are going to be based on casinos. This is a city that has, it's just lost. However, there's a lot going on in southeastern Michigan. It's not going on much around Detroit, and you don't know if Detroit's going to come back or not. But again, they know cars. They may not make an awful lot of cars in the future, but they have a lot of expertise on design, on research. There are various high-level knowledge-era jobs, and that's the economy we're moving into, the knowledge economy. There are places there for workers who know cars. Just south of Ann Arbor, in a little town called Dundee, three auto companies, I think it was Mitsubishi and Daimler, one other that I forget, came together, and they've set up an auto engine plant. And making engines for about one-third of what it cost before. It's very modern stuff. It doesn't employ as many people as it used to. But at least you have some of the industry and some of the car-related activities there. This could easily be the wave of the future. The question you have to ask, though, how many people are these going to employ? Possibly a lot, possibly not much. We do not know if these new industries, these new research, knowledge era industries, the bioscience, the nanotech, all that, is that going to replace the jobs that have been lost now in the industrial arena? This is, you know, globalization is new, and this is an answer that we don't know. It's a little scary.
I ask you seriously because I think they should happen. Have you been asked to sit down with Clinton, Obama, and McCain to talk about these ideas?
No, I haven't. But
You really should be. You should be asked to do that.
And when they were campaigning through the Midwest, they learned a lot of this. You can't spend a year campaigning in Iowa without getting an earful of this. You know, I'd be very flattered to talk with them or if they had a look at my book. But I think they're aware of what's going on because simply they have been on the ground in a lot of the places where I was. And you hear things.
Right. I love your book. It's just so good. Thank you so much for being with us.
Kathleen, thank you, and keep up the good work.
Thanks. Richard Longworth, his book is Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism. He spent 11,000 miles traveling all over the Midwest to figure out what ails us in those little pockets, and there are darn few pockets where some creativity and economic growth is taking place. He's a fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, was an award-winning foreign correspondent and senior writer at the Chicago Tribune. We are in a pledge drive. I'm joined in studio by Mike Crane from Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're back to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, you hear a conversation like that, and you realize that there are some important voices worth listening to, and you hear them here. So we ask for your support for this kind of talk. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go online at WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552. Mike, hi.
Hi, it's good to be here. And, you know, we started this hour with a goal of $2,500 to raise, and we're halfway there.
All right, we can get there.
$1,245 is the total at this point from 9 new members, and a total of 13 people have gotten in touch via WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. So be one of those people to help us reach that $2,500 goal with your contact right now online or on the phone.
You're a real public radio listener. I meet you all over. I spoke to the AAUW State Convention over the weekend, and everybody in that room is a public radio listener. So I hope that you have contributed. You know what show is on the air at any time without looking at a program guide. You consider at least one show a week a must in your life. After I've spent so many years doing this, I consider almost every show a must. And, you know, I learn so much. I'm going to school every day. You find yourself quoting a news report to a friend. I do that every single day. And you even remember the name of the reporter who filed the story. So you are a real public radio listener when you can do any of these things. And you are very much a real public radio member when you contribute. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, becoming a member is going to be one of the easiest things that you will do today. And it's just so simple to contribute. All you have to do is log on at WPR.org and fill in the form. Or just call 888-202-2552. And in about 3 minutes, you'll have done your part. It all starts with you. So click and join at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Thanks.
The Ideas Network gives you extremely important information and advice. The network is unique, very unique in this country. Have you benefited from the advice that you've heard? Have you ever found yourself hovering near the radio, drawn into a discussion on the Ideas Network? I know that I and many of us here have sort of pulled off the road or haven't gone into the house because you wanted to hear, you didn't want to miss what was being said. I do that all the time. You need to get somewhere, but that discussion is very, very interesting. So you're a couple minutes late. And maybe you've learned something or you've been influenced by what you've heard. Pledge your support and appreciation for the Ideas Network securely online at WPR.org or toll free at 888-202-2552.
We're happy to get your pledge any way you choose, but giving on the web is especially efficient. Go to WPR.org. You can pledge whenever you want to. And if maybe you're working online right now, you barely have to stop what you're doing just to open up a new window in your browser. And then the other thing that's great is you will be saving Wisconsin Public Radio the cost of sending you a reminder about your pledge. And then you will save the cost of a stamp and the bother of writing a check. WPR.org is the place to make that pledge.
How do you know someone is a public radio listener? It's not by what they wear or how they look or whether they're male or female or young or old. You can identify this group of people because they have a deep interest in learning about the world around them. They're curious, they're inquisitive, they're eager to learn about current events and how learning from the past informs the future. If you want to see one, all you have to do is look in the mirror because it's you. You're curious, you're informed, active, aware. The kind of radio that you expect here at WPR comes with a pretty steep price tag, and public radio listeners like you and me become radio members, public radio members, to support it. So please take a moment to feed your habit. Pledge your support now securely online at WPR.org or toll free at 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is committed to bringing you alternative points of view and accurate information. One listener had this to say.
Wisconsin Public Radio is to be complimented. I'm providing these alternative views to help us gain a deeper and more meaningful perspective as to what is really going on. It really is a reflection of why the Americans live in this country. It's the ability for all of us to speak what's in our mind and work on that. And we don't need answers. What we need is information. And your program and others really are providing us information. And I want to thank Wisconsin Public Radio.
Why not thank us with a pledge? Here's the number to call.
Oh, here's the number to call. What's the number to call, Mike?
It's 888-202-2552. 888-202-2552. 2552 or contribute online. That can be even easier. It's WPR.org.
All right. And we sure do thank you for all of you who have pledged. We have a goal of $2,500, I believe, for this hour. And we've had how many callers?
At last count, it was 13. We're going to see if we can get an update on that. And I want to mention a couple of the people that
Please.
Have called. Donald from Holcomb said, you know, I wouldn't want to be without it. Public radio is a great thing. And another Donald from Appleton said that they love the news and that Kathleen's program is their favorite. Mm. So thank you, Kathleen, for what you do every day, day in and day out, to provide this valuable information. We're now up to $1,265. That's the new count, and 14 people have gotten in touch this hour. Let's hear from you.
Yes, please. Give a call for this hour. Think about what we learned about the economy. We're on the issues that are most important to Americans, and then we look at the past to find out how we've handled similar kinds of issues. I know many of you love this program. Please call with your support. Help us reach our goal, 888-202-2552, for you to call, 888-202-2552. We have News Mike coming up in just a few moments. I want to thank Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and John Treader for on-air production, and Mike Crane for coming in from Madison to help ask for your donations to this wonderful radio service. Talk to you in a little while. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.